Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I'm sure nobody has the verse in front of them except for me, so I'll just read the Sanskrit three times and then we'll do the word-by-word synonyms. Shonaku vachasavai nivitta nirata sarvatro pekshato munake kashava brihatim etam atmarhama samavyasat. Shonaku vachasavai nivitta nirata sarvatro pekshato munake kashava brihatim etam atmarhama samavyasat. Shonaku vachasavai nivritik nirata sarvatro pekshato munahi kasya vabrihatim etam yivo atmarama samabhyasat. So you can repeat. Shonaku vacha. Sri Shonaka said. Actually asks. Saha. He. Vai. Of course, nivritti, on the path of self-realization, nirataha, always engaged, sarvatra, in every respect, upekshakaha, indifferent, munihi, sage, kasha. For what reason?
Va
or brihatim, vast, etam, this. Atma Rama, one pleased in himself. Asamabhyasat, undergo the studies. So translation. Sri Shonaka asked Sutta Goswami. Sri Shukadeva Goswami was already on the path of self-realization, and thus he was pleased with his own self. So why did he take the trouble to undergo the study of such a vast literature? So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. For the people in general, the highest perfection of life is to cease from material activities and be fixed on the path of self-realization. Those who take pleasure in sense enjoyment, or those who are fixed in material bodily welfare work, are called karmis. Out of thousands and millions of such karmis, one may become an atmarama by self-realization. Atma means self, and rama means to take pleasure. Everyone is searching after the highest pleasure, but the standard of pleasure of one may be different from the standard of another. Therefore, the standard of pleasure enjoyed by the karmis is different from that of the atmaramas. The atmaramas are completely indifferent to material enjoyment in every respect. Srila Shukadeva Goswami had already attained that stage, and still he was attracted to undergo the study of studying the great Bhagavatam literature. This means that Srimad Bhagavatam is postgraduate study even for the Atmaramas who have surpassed all the studies of Vedic knowledge. So again. So Sri Shanagovacha Savai Nivati Nirata Savatro Pikshito Munahi Kasya Va Brihatam Metam Atmarama Sama Vyasat. So Omagana Timanandasha Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Unminitam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So this is a famous section of the Srimad Bhagavatam that precedes the what's called the Atmarama verse, which is actually the next verse in this particular chapter. And we're not going to discuss that verse right now. But let's discuss a little bit about Shukadev Goswami. So Shukadeva Goswami, as you know from previously reading in this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, he was the son of Vyasadeva, Vyasadeva, of course, is the literary incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he was self-realized in the sense that's described here in the verse in the Sanskrit, nivritti. That means, nivritti basically is a negation. That, in other words, the word vritti is very similar to, actually, where the English word vert comes from. I don't know if any of you heard of vert, like invert, subvert, and very famous nowadays, pervert. Invert, subvert, pervert, revert, and all these different vert words. So vert means basically turning. So nivritti means to stop the turning, but actually not stop turning of the wheels. But according to Patanjali, it means to stop the turning of your mind. Because the mind is, as Arjuna describes in the Gita, what? Chanchalahi manaha krishna pramati balabhadridam dashaham nigraham manye vayor iva shudushkaram. Everybody knows that verse? Very famous verse. The mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate, and very strong, and nobody can control it. It's like controlling the what? Does anyone know? The wind. The wind, okay. Very good. So we have some Bhagavad Gita scholars here. So, anyway, so our mind is really just like uncontrolled. You know, it's the sixth sense. Manasakshtani Indriyani Prakriti Stani Karshati. So, therefore, in order to control the mind, you have the processes of yoga. And Patanjali, in his Yoga Sutras, talks about this. He says, it's, he used the word vritti, it's to stop the turning of the mind, or the turning of the mind. So it's a negation. And the problem with negations, in general, is that when you try to do something negative, you can't do it. Why is that? Because you can't do a don't. Like if I say, don't think of something, a typical example I give is really a wild example. I said, don't think of a pink elephant. None of you should think of a pink elephant. You know, pink polka dot elephant. You know, just don't think of a pink elephant, a very fat pink elephant with polka dots all over its body. And immediately the image, if I tell you not to do it, you'll do it. And of course, that's our human nature. that's why when we present Krishna consciousness to people who are not accustomed to our language or nomenclature, they actually think it's pretty weird because we have all these don'ts. Prabhupada described don'ts one time jokingly as donuts, you know, do nots. You know what a donut is? You know, I think with a hole in it. Okay. So Prabhupada presented it in that way because you can't do a don't. And basically, the more you think of something as a negative, the more you actually get attached to it. I'll give you a practical example in ISKCON. It may not be politically correct. In the beginning days of the movement, we weren't told, you know, this because before we became sophisticated, we weren't told that women were Maya. At least the men weren't told. And the women weren't told that men were Maya. So you would think, wow, that means everything would be like free love, or whatever you call it nowadays. No, everybody treated each other as brothers and sisters. There wasn't, you know, nobody was really agitated in their minds. But then as we became more advanced, I'm speaking sarcastically right now, in case you haven't discovered. As we became more advanced in devotional service, or we got knowledge of Maya, then we started to look upon each other as Maya or illusion. And because of that, men got more attracted to the ladies. And the ladies got more attracted to the men. Oh, there's Maya Devi, okay. There's Mohini. There's Durga. Wow, that's pretty far out. Anyway, there's the illusory energy personified. So it's good to have that knowledge so you can be in Maya more. So, and therefore, the what's one of the reasons, like, the whole family atmosphere in ISKCON started to disintegrate and it became more like a fanatical brahmachari ashram, and books began to be published like women should be either mothers or masters. Anyway, don't get too political about this whole thing. You know, instead of seeing people as spirit souls in different bodies, instead we actually got to the illusory platform of seeing people's vehicles as the self. It was nice, you know. You're a Volkswagen, you're a Toyota, you're a, what are the types of cars you have? You're Ford and everything like that. So that's the opposite of what Krishna teaches in the Isopanishad. Yastu sarvani bhutani atmana evanu pashati. Sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tatodna vigigupshate. That one should see all living entities equally. Yastu sarvani bhutani, sarvani bhutani. Bhutani means living entities, of living entities, and sarvani means all. That's Krishna consciousness. Of course, also we have verses in the Gita saying the same thing, that vidya vinayas sampane brahmani gavihastami shumi chaiva swapakya cha. Pandita samadarshana. Anyone's heard that verse before? Yeah. The learned, gentle sage sees dog, dog-eater, you know, etc. So the problem is, okay, so I don't want to just dwell on the man-woman thing. That's one of the problems. And then we began to see others who were not Krishna conscious as karmis, demons, rakshasas. As our language developed, we learned more nomenclature. We became more expert in divisive language. You understand? Divisive language that divides people. Like, you're, that's a karmi, that's a meat eater, it's a rakshasa. And, you know, when are you going to visit your rakshasa mother? And so, yeah, I actually became scared of my mother after a while. So the first time I visited my mother, every time, actually in the beginning years, I had to bring a brahmachari to protect me from my mother. And my mother said, you know, why are you bringing a brahmachari? Oh, she didn't have a brahmachari. Why are you bringing this other guy with you? And I said, well, it's just my friend. And she understood what was happening. Anyways, so this, you know, just nivritta or the negation really does not help us become Krishna conscious. In fact, it helps us become more attracted to the, let us say, the diversity in this material energy, the different things that we can enjoy in the material energy. So Shukadeva Goswami, of course, was not attracted to anything in this material world. He was acting like a Brahmavadi. There's a difference between a Brahmavadi and a Mayavadi, in case you haven't figured that out. A Mayavadi is one who says the Lord's body is material and everything is illusion, or as the Beatles say, what, strawberry fields forever? Never heard that expression? No? Well, there was a... Anyway, forget it. You're all too young to understand these things. So, so anyway, so that's a Mayavadi. But a Brahmavadi is more like an agnostic. An agnostic is just like, I don't know anything about God. Maybe he exists, maybe he doesn't. And a Mayavadi is more like an atheist. Atheist means there's no God. So, therefore, Shukadeva Goswami just didn't have information about the Supreme Personality of God. And the story of Shukadeva Goswami is very similar to the story of the four Kumaras, who were also Brahmavadis, who didn't have any information, or at least were not yet associated with the Supreme Lord. And when the four Kumaras went to see Lord Vishnu, and they actually were able to smell the flowers, or the scent of the flowers, the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then they became full-fledged devotees. And Shukadeva Goswami, similar story with him, that Shukadeva Goswami was within the womb of his mother, and he was so determined not to get attached to anything in this material world, he refused to come out of his mother. And some stories say 16 years, other stories, you know, different versions of the Quran say 12 years. But whatever it was a long pregnancy. A lot more than 9 months. So he was in the womb of his mother, and basically nobody could convince him to come out. Because he thought, once I come out, then everyone will, like, think I'm cute. And then I'll be a Maya. Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes this, that in the womb of the mother, there is some difficulty. You know, the worms bite you, and every time your mother takes chili peppers, you know, you feel it all over your body, and things like that. And then when you get out, then the enjoyment starts, because you become the center of all attention. You become the deity in your house. Isn't it? You come out, and the mother, everyone says, oh, how cute you are, pulls your cheek, and, you know, holds you. Isn't he a cute little kid? And, of course, as you get older, that doesn't continue. I can say truthfully, no one has done that to me in the last 65 years. I'm sort of missing it, you know. But, you know, being a guru sort of makes up for it. Instead of pinching your cheek, they pinch your feet. Anyway. So instead of putting you in a bassinet, you know, they bathe your feet. So anyway, Shukadev Goswami was actually fearful of that. Because when you get so much attention, it actually can cause you to deviate from your spiritual determination, from your spiritual path. In fact, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, one of the causes of anarthas is the advancement in devotional service. He gives four causes of anarthas. He says one cause is, of course, sinful activities. Another cause is pious activities, obviously, because you become enamored by this material world. Another cause is offenses. That's an obvious thing. And the fourth cause is byproducts of devotional service. So as you progress in devotional service, guess what? People start to say nice things about you. And if you happen to become a guru, they write a whole book about you every year. Like Kishori is working on my book for this year. And, you know, this year I won't read any of Prabhupada's books. I'll just read my Vyasa's book. And my meditation will be on different pictures of myself in the book with my various pastimes. It's a danger. Actually, it's a danger. You know, because actually the statement is, he who praises me is my enemy. Right? So you get a lot of praise, and that means you got a lot of enemies. If you take it like that. And he who chastises me is my friend. So, anyway, that's why it's important always for the devotees to have friends in devotional service who will correct them if they do something wrong. So it's actually a great stumbling block in advancement in devotional service. Your own advancement. And your praise you get for that. So going back to the story, so Shukadev Goswami, all right, let me describe how you overcome it. You overcome that by always remembering you're a servant. And you're not your position. Again, you're not your designation. Sarvopati vininu muktam. Understanding that you're always a servant of everybody, even what we call karmis. We're servants of them in bringing them to Krishna consciousness. So, all right, getting back to Shukadeva Goswami. So he was afraid of that sort of maya. And that's why he didn't come out of his womb until, you know, he heard about Krishna. Then he came out of his mother's womb. And, of course, the first thing he did is he ran away. And it's described in the Bhagavatam, only the trees echoed the plaintive cry of Srila Vyasadeva as he was crying out, oh, my son, oh, my son. Imagine waiting 16 years and your kid runs away. It's pretty frustrating. Anyway, so Shukadeva Goswami was running away. Vyasadeva was running after him. And it's described elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, in order to pacify Vyasadeva, Shukadeva used his mystic power to create any duplicate Shukadev Goswami, or duplicate Shukadev, not Goswami at this point. And the father took home the duplicate, the clone. It's interesting how they were able to clone people in those days. There's many stories about that in the Bhagavatam. Even in the Ramayana, there's stories about cloning people. It's not something new, genetic engineering, cloning people. It's like you had Prithu and Archie, who were created from Vena by cloning the body of Vena, taking out the bad genes, which became Bahuka, and the good genes, which actually became Prithu and Archie, his wife, incarnations of Krishna. So Shukadev Goswami cloned a duplicate Shukadev Goswami, and in the Bhagavatam, it actually describes how he fits in the whole family tree. You know, the duplicate Shukadev Goswami from Vyasadev. So then Shukadev Goswami, after running away from his father, decides, well, maybe it's a good idea to study with Dad, the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he goes back and he studies again the Srimad Bhagavatam because he's already attracted to Krishna, having heard about Krishna's glories. This is a pastime. Shukadev Goswami is eternally a devotee of the Lord. My godbrother Gaur Govindamaraj describes in a very interesting story how Shukadev Goswami is actually the parrot of Srimati Radharani. Have any of you heard the story before? No. All right, so I'll tell the story. This is Gaur Govindamaraj. So once upon a time, very interesting story. What happened is that Lord Shiva was giving Bhagavatam class. This, of course, is a very esoteric story. Don't imitate this at home. So he was giving Bhagavatam class to Parvati. And Parvati, because Parvati's here right now, anyway. So I got to be careful. So Parvati. That's Lord Shiva's Parvati, not Parvati Dasi. Anyway, so Parvati was doing the same thing that 90% of the devotees do during Bhagavatam class. Can anyone guess what that is? Sleeping. Yeah, it's bona fide because it's said in the Bhagavatam that all the inauspicious things are almost destroyed in your heart by hearing Bhagavatam. So what's keeping you from resting properly are the inauspicious anarthas. So as soon as you hear Bhagavatam, then you have no impediments anymore to sleeping. Of course, in the early days, they used to force us to just rest 5 hours a night. So everybody slept in Bhagavatam. And even you had to stand up, and sometimes in the middle of Bhagavatam class, you would hear a crashing noise. And someone just like crashed to the ground from a standing position. And we of course, we caught up on our sleep while we were driving cars. So get back to the story. Parvati was resting, sleeping, and in order to not discourage Lord Shiva, there was a parrot, and that parrot was the parrot of Srimati Radharani. There's many stories in Rupa Goswami's literature, especially the Vidugdha Madhava about Radharani's parrot, and also the Lita Madhava. So this parrot was actually imitating the sound of Parvati's voice. And Lord Shiva was saying, you know, reading the Bhagavatam and saying, isn't this nice? And the parrot would go, yes, it's wonderful. You know, however, you know, I can't imitate Parvati's voice. Maybe Parvati can tell the voice how it sounds. But anyway, so Lord Shiva was satisfied. And finally he looks up and sees that Parvati is like resting. And he sees this parrot and he gets very angry at the parrot. This is an esoteric story, you know, which illustrates the Siddhanta. It's not necessary, you know, that sometimes you have stories that illustrate the Siddhanta rather than being like factual stories. So I'm just telling it because Gaur Govindamaraj told the story. And I respect him greatly. So anyway, so then what happened is that Lord Shiva started chasing the parrot. And the parrot was pretty scared. Because when Lord Shiva is chasing you, I mean, it's a pretty scary event. So at the same time, there was a Bhagavatam class going on, and Srila Vyasadeva was giving his wife Srimad Bhagavatam class. You heard the story before?
Yeah.
I think you know the story. So he was giving his wife Srimad Bhagavatam class, and she was awake. She was going, wow, wow, isn't that cool? Well, not cool. But anyway, isn't that interesting? And she had her mouth open. And it's described that the parrot, being afraid of Lord Shiva, flew into her mouth. And that was the pregnancy. Don't try that. You ladies who want a kid, don't try it. Don't try swallowing parrots. You will die. So, the story is told, see, many stories are told to illustrate the Siddhanta. They may or may not be factual stories. Everyone understands that point? You know, because the Vedic literatures are concerned with Siddhanta, Tattva, etc. And there's many, many, I mean, for example, there's stories about, say, the Narottama Vilas, or Bhakti Ratnakara. Let's take the Bhakti Ratnakara. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that the Bhakti Ratnakara stories are not that factual. Those are the stories about Narottama Das Thakur, Shyamananda, and Srinivas Acharya. He said, but he told his devotees to read it for Siddhanta. You understand? Siddhanta. To understand Siddhanta and Tattva. Siddhanta means perfect conclusion. Tattva means basically the position of each person. So we have stories like that. But the Bhagavatam is all true stories. Unless it prefaces it by explaining that it's a metaphorical story, like the story of Paramjana. That's obviously a metaphorical story. So you have many stories like that. So anyway, so Shukadeva Goswami was the parrot of Srimati Radharani, and obviously he was a pure devotee already. But for the sake of pastimes, he showed the importance of hearing Krishna Katha, and also how Krishna Katha is transcendental to, which is what the Atmarama verse describes, transcendental to everything in this material world. Because someone is already detached from everything in the material world, why would they be attracted to Krishna Katha unless it was something different than material? And so that's called, of course, in Bhagavad Gita, a higher taste. So if we want to be free, getting to the point of application, if we want to actually be freed from the illusion of this material world, don't concentrate on, you know, nivritti simply. We should concentrate on pravritti. You know, nivritti, pravritti. Of course, those words mean something different in different contexts. We should concentrate on the positive. And that's how I often describe Krishna, I try to describe Krishna consciousness. Instead of giving a standard Sunday feast lecture telling everybody what they shouldn't do and scaring everybody with the Yamadutas, and, you know, telling everybody about the threefold miseries and how they're going to die at any moment. You know, standard Hare Krishna Sunday feast lecture. Adi Atmi, Adi Bhauti, Adi Daivik, miseries. And you could die at any minute, and the Yamadutas again. That's actually how the devotees preach to me. And that's why it took me 2 more years to join the Hare Krishna movement. Because I walked in the temple, and it was... Actually, it was this devotee, Amarendra, some of you may know him. He was a student radical before. And he just preached heavy to me. And even when I wanted to read Prabhupada's books, the devotees told me I wasn't qualified. I was at the temple. I picked up, I think it was Isopanishad, and the devotee said, you're not qualified to read that. You have to hear from us. So we should present Krishna consciousness as something positive. And then by doing the positive, automatically, the negative will go away. That's our philosophy. It's not that we simply harp on what people shouldn't do, but we should tell people what they should do. Even when I explain sometimes the offenses on chanting, I explain them in a positive way rather than a negative way. instead of saying, one should not offend devotees of the Lord who have dedicated their lives to propagating the Holy. One should serve them. Because Mahat Sevam Ahuravi Muktes, by serving great personalities, you get liberated. That's a lot more pleasant than don't do this and don't do this. Material world is Maya, it's illusion. Oh my God. It sounds like we're Buddhists. You know, the Buddhists, Four Noble Truths, material world is suffering, suffering is cause of attachment, give up the attachment, suffering goes away, and then of course do the Eightfold Path. I mean, it's just not that attractive. So we have something very attractive, and so automatically people will take to our regulative practices. So that's the point here. Shukadeva Goswami is beginning attracted, and this is the postgraduate study of self-realization, Srimad Bhagavatam. So anybody have any questions or comments? Yes.
Yeah, so the devotees, obviously I'm not going to suggest, well, you said Sukadeva Goswami is a pure devotee.
Yeah.
He was meditating that everything's Maya.
Yeah.
The worm. I guess it's a silly question, actually. I was thinking at the time, he's a pure devotee.
Yeah.
He could have easily transcended the Maya.
Yeah.
Rather than be allured into it. Like all those past devotees who were told that, you know, everything's Maya, woman is Maya, man is Maya. So therefore why he couldn't come out earlier and just be his pure devotee transcendental self.
Why?
In the face of Maya.
Well, the reason he could have, but it was a pastime because he was under Yoga Maya. Now, there's two types of Maya, Yoga Maya and Mahamaya. Mahamaya is the stuff that makes us forget who we are, makes us think we're our bodies. Yoga Maya is the potency of the Lord that enables us to, participate with the Lord in his pastimes. Which means sometimes we forget who we are under Yoga Maya. We forget who Krishna is, that Krishna is God. But this is Krishna's desire so we can participate with him. And I think you find many examples of this, like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was also apparently a Brahmavadi, was considered to be an incarnation of Brihaspati, who is actually a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So devotees sometimes under Yoga Maya are apparently in Mahamaya. Like Arjuna, for example, in the Bhagavad Gita. It was apparently he was in material illusion, but actually it was Krishna's plan. So the pastime could take place. Same thing with Shukadeva Goswami.
All right, thank you very much.
It was Krishna's plan. Yep. Now, that doesn't apply to us. We shouldn't think, it's Krishna's plan that I'm in my... Actually, this is a pastime. It's my pastime of being in Maya, of going to the bar, smoking marijuana. You know, it's my pastime before I joined the Hare Krishna movement. You want to hear the story? Anyway, so it's not the pastime. You know, sometimes, like, even when one has a high position in the Krishna conscious movement, like Guru, they say, you know, you came from the spiritual world. You hear this all the time. Krishna sent you from the spiritual world. And this is actually your pastime. You were born in Maladesh. And even though you ate so many chickens and God knows what else you ate, it was a pastime. It was like Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Now you hear this. Sometimes from the, you know, fanatic disciples, you hear this. Yeah. You're a Nityasiddha devotee. I said, well, no way. It's not a pastime. It was my illusion, and I'm only here by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, only here to you because it was mercy. I'm not. So one has to always remember that we're just like recipients of the mercy of a pure devotee, especially his divine grace of the Prabhupada, without whom, you know, none of us would be here today. So, good question, Param. So, anybody else have a question? Yes, Rupa.
So, Maharaj, a lot of these Mayavadi personalities, and they're engaging in a lot of sinful activity, eating meat, going to nightclubs, whatever.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're believing that they are God. Do they seriously believe that they are God?
Well, I think it's good money-making business. Because if you're God, you get a lot of contributions. Everyone wants blessings. That's interesting. I mean, even if, like me, you know, I make him believe I'm a devotee, and people want blessings from me, even though I'm not a devotee. Anyway, I'm just a good pretender, making believe in devotee. So I guess it's a good business, and after a while, you can be convinced. The point is, if you hear something enough times, you actually start to believe it, even if it's obviously a lie. That principle is illustrated in today's world in what we call fake news. That you have, I mean, let's say, there's one leader in the world who should remain nameless, he who cannot be named. Voldemort, anyway, probably you don't know what I mean by that. Hopefully you don't. You do? he could not be named. So there's one leader who keeps saying false things after a while, and everyone believes it. Not everyone, but, you know, his followers, which are an amazing amount of people, believe it after a while. So if you hear the same thing over and over again, it's like hypnotism. You get confused. Yeah, maybe it is true. Maybe I'm interested in it. Maybe I am God. And this is just my pastime. I mean, like, Lord Ram, he forgot he was God. You know, when Sita Devi was kidnapped, you know, he was in anxiety. He didn't know how to cross the ocean. You know, look at that. You know, look at God's pastimes, right? He spent 1 week trying to do austerities to get the ocean to allow him to pass to Lanka, and the ocean didn't respond. So if he's God, why didn't he just, like, fly over the ocean? Or why didn't he just, you know, he could do so many things. So I'm the same. I'm just God, but it's just a pastime that I'm acting like an ordinary conditioned soul. Or I'm just a pure devotee. You know, you get the same thing in ISKCON. I'm just a pure devotee, but I'm acting for the sake of teaching others. like Lord Chaitanya, too. Before Lord Chaitanya took initiation, he was actually harassing the devotees. You know, he would go to the devotees and just say, why you believe what you believe in? And he would philosophically, using rhetoric, just defeat their philosophies. And the devotees would run away. Whenever they saw Nimai Pandit coming, they'd run to the opposite side of the street. And they'd pray to Krishna, my dear Krishna, let Nimai Pandit become a devotee so we have a good preacher. So I'm like that. You know, people actually can believe any damn thing. I mean, just like you see all these worshippers, you know, you got people in India who declare themselves to be God. I mean, that's bad enough. But their worshippers, that's unbelievable. How people will believe Voldemort. You know what I'm talking about. And, you know, it's just, huh? I didn't understand people were so gullible. Anyway, there was a great American acharya named P.T. Barnum. None of you have heard of him, I don't think. He was the founder acharya of the circus. And he had a famous saying. It's actually under a statue. I was studying nuclear energy at the University of Connecticut when I was a kid. Had to make a bomb. And they had, that was his hometown, and there's a statue, and under the statue it says, a fool is born every minute. So, we should not be foolish. We're supposed to not follow blindly. Actually, Prabhupada even says in the Bhagavad Gita, blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. So, we have to be careful. Everything has to be based upon guru, sadhu, and shastra. In other words, if the guru says something, we should want to hear where it's coming from in shastra. You know, not some ordinary thing, you know, like I would like quinoa for dinner. Where's that coming from? But, you know, some philosophical or spiritual point. Where is that coming from? You know, if you say we're part and parcel of Krishna, where is that coming from? Well, Bhagavad Gita, you know, Mami Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, etc. So, in other words, we have checks and balances. You follow that? Checks and balances. So, Guru is absolute, but within a certain realm. Like if the Guru says, I think you should invest in this particular, in Tesla, you know, it's like, not good? Why not?
Tesla, did you say?
Tesla, yeah.
That's too much hooch.
Okay. That's true. So if the Guru says you should invest in this particular stock, that's not absolute. Even the Guru may be speaking sometimes, a bona fide Guru may be speaking sometimes from a non-absolute platform, because he's a person. You know, it's not that the food he likes is the food that everyone should like, because that's the food that Krishna likes. You know, the Guru is an individual. So even a pure devotee is an individual. So you have to be able to ascertain what is absolute and what is not absolute in this world by using your brain. Don't follow blindly. You know, there's so many stories about people who follow the order. I mean, Germany, they were following in World War II, following the orders of Adolf Hitler, sort of blindly. And even there was this one psychological experiment where the professor was testing the students to see if they would be willing to give, let's say, a 400-volt shock to another person. So I'm not going to tell about the whole experiment now because it'd take too long. And just because the students or the volunteers were following the orders of the professor, they actually practically gave, what they didn't really give a shock, it was just a show, but they thought they were giving a deadly shock to other participants because they were following the order of the teacher. So we don't want to be like that. We want to be, Prabhupada said he wanted independent-minded, you know, creative people in the Krishna consciousness movement. Not just accepting things blindly. Of course. All right, any other questions? Yes. Oh, yeah.
My question is in relation to having a healthy relationship with our mind. So
yeah.
You find yourself in a situation that it's like you feel these separate identities in the head. You know, this is the mind talking, this is hopefully the intelligence.
Yeah.
Figure, and they can have these full-on conversations, you know, arguments in the head, and kind of like, you know, and then of course the mind retaliates by coming up with a lot of filth in the most inappropriate moments, and you can have like, you know, okay, that's it, extra rounds, no TV, whatever, you know, sort of like this thread going on. So, in the end it doesn't feel very healthy, it feels like you've got an enemy living.
So, of course, Krishna consciousness is known as Buddha Yoga, which means making the intelligence very strong. However, the mind needs some satisfaction. You got to feed the mind something. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his Chaitanya Shikshamrita, talks about this. He says that we have different necessities of the gross body, necessities of the subtle body, which is the mind, and we have spiritual necessities. In modern nomenclature, that would be called the hierarchy of needs, which this great psychologist Maslow talked about. He's a very brilliant psychologist. I've studied a lot of his work. And it's not that you don't satisfy the mind's needs, but you can satisfy them in a way that is not counterproductive to Krishna consciousness. I mean, this is... Or the physical body's needs. You have a need for food, you have a need, and you have a need for recreation too. You have a need for fun. Just like one time, I took all the devotees from the temple, it was like 30 devotees, and we went on whitewater rafting together. You know what that is? Yeah, when you go down the rapids. It was nice. And we were fighting with the other devotees, overturning the other boat. You know, it was fun. And also, actually, we made it very Krishna conscious, because the captain of each boat, we told him when he wanted us to row on the right, he had to say Nittai, and on the left, Gurunga. So for the whole trip, he was going Nittai, Nittai, Gurunga, Gurunga, Nittai, Nittai. And at the end, he became a devotee. 3 hours of chanting Nittai Gauranga, and that was it for the guy. So, you know, a devotee has to have some recreation too. You know, playing some sports. I mean, what's the harm of playing a game of volleyball or kickboxing? No, kickboxing. So, I mean, what's the harm in doing something like that? It's, you know, just not, you know, we may say it's maya, but you have these needs to be progress in a regulated, you know, in a steady fashion in devotional service. You have to work on your needs too. Physical needs, mental needs, emotional needs. Emotions, well. You know, how do you fulfill emotional needs? We all have a need for loving relationships. It's not that we just chant Hare Krishna and every devotee is just like a dog. You know, we have to love each other. What's that song? Come on, everybody, gotta love each other right now. You remember that song?
Yes, I do.
Who wrote that song?
Not sure.
I don't remember. Anyway, kumbaya. So...
or 70, didn't
it? Yeah, 68 or 70. So, I mean, we got, you know, what does Rupa Goswami say? Dadati pratigranati guyama kyati prachati bhunkte bhojate jaiva. You know, it's loving exchanges. Prabhupada said our movement increases because of that. So we need that too. You know, we have a need, there's emotional needs. And then ultimately we have a spiritual need. But you can't negate these other needs or else after a while, you'll explode, or you'll end up in a mental institution. And, like you're saying, like if you just, there's the mind saying, you know, I need to get away a little bit, all the time being enclosed in a Hare Krishna temple, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Ram. I need some peace, and then you're saying to the mind, that's nonsense. The mind's saying, but I need it. And after a while, where did you go? So better, you know, understand your needs that are not counterproductive to Krishna consciousness. And, you know, don't get guilty. You know, there's a whole thing about being guilty about things. You know, people get guilty. Oh, the other day, I remember when I joined the movement, it was really strict. Anyway, I won't tell you who was in charge. But anyway, it's really strict. And you're not allowed to eat outside. You're not allowed to do this or anything. So all of a sudden, me and the other brahmacharis, we just couldn't take it anymore. We just got in a van, the Sankirtan van, drove off and bought some bell peppers. You know what bell peppers are?
Yeah.
And started eating them because we weren't allowed to have raw food or something like that. And before that, we were all raw food, vegans and everything. So just like, oh, now I'm enjoying. And then afterwards, we thought, we fell down. So we go to the temple president and confess. My dear, can you forgive us? What prayaschitta do we need, you know, atonement do we need to do? All right, go on, Sankirtan. So, so you know, we got to chill out a little bit, as the 1960s expression goes, and just like be practical in what you need, and there's a lot of things in Krishna consciousness that, as we take responsibility, there sometimes can cause some stress, so we need stress relief. Because like everybody knows that, you know, I like to tell jokes. Or maybe nobody knows that. But anyway, so... because, in my service, as soon as the things get really stressy, I get more humorous. You know, and... Anyway, so... But I say to people who criticize, oh, you're telling too much, just I said, lay off, you know. I'm still here. After 50 years, I'm still here, you know, just lay off, you know. I'm following the principles, but, you know, a little eccentric. Isn't it? Yes, Parash.
Parash, just a little change to the discourse of the Bhakti Ratnakara that was being...
Bhakti Ratnakara. Yeah.
Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj obviously was chilling out a little there when he allowed the reading. His form of chilling out. So strict.
Yeah, so strict. But he explained to his disciples, don't take everything there as the literal word of what happened, but everything that's described is perfect Siddhanta. Because it was a pure devotee who wrote it. Narhari Chakravarti, who wrote it.
Do you think they were embellished? For what reason? Not absolute truth then? Why were the stories a little...
Well, that's a standard thing you do with histories of saints. I forget the exact technical... What's the technical word? Hagiography. That's, you always embellish it a little bit. And not always, but it's generally done.
It's a bit like introducing the Maharaji, there's a bit of that.
Yeah. And you can see in his traveling around the world, he meets the Pope takes japa beads, and the Pope is chanting japa every day secretly, things like that.
Then he painted Hare Krishna on every one of his toenails, yes.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Amazing
how he can do it. Yeah, so, definitely... You can embellish things when you're dealing with the history of saints. And that's as long as the Siddhanta is not wrong. I mean, in mundane history, we're used to, the years and everything like that. 1492, Columbus sailed, the ocean blue, whatever. But in the Vedic history, I mean, just like even in the Bhagavatam, you have two appearances of Lord Varaha combined in the story. Amalgamation. The Acharyas point that out. And both appearances happened, true, but not at the same time. But that's not important that they didn't happen at the same time. Because the Siddhanta is being presented, the pastimes are being presented. And so we have to get away from this mundane conception of history when we're hearing these descriptions. But that Bhakti Ratnakara is a beautiful book. I love that Bhakti Ratnakara. About the pastimes of Narottamadas Thakur, Shyamananda, and Srinivasacharya, the three personalities who were the first Sankirtan devotees.
And there is a lot in this Shastra to challenge our mundane viewpoints, isn't there?
Yeah.
Obviously hearing something that's not so absolutely pinpoint on what happened does prepare us for things, like devotees have trouble with things Prabhupada said, going to the moon, Timingilla fish, and, parrot birds in the sky that can...
Fly to other planets.
Like that. So.
Yeah, I mean, those things are... I mean, the Bhagavatam's descriptions are true, but maybe they're in a different yuga or a different universe. I mean, even according to the scientists, there's multiverses, multi-universes. If you study quantum mechanics, quantum theory. And so, all these things are possible. I mean, there's so many amazing things that people are, even the scientists are discovering. I was just reading this morning, the scientists discovered another planet going around the Earth just in the last day or two. Around the Sun. Going, and, they call it a super Earth, Anyway, so you, and if you get out a microscope, you discover so many creatures like living on your skin that would horrify you.
Your eyelashes.
And your eyelashes, all these little creatures who eat your skin, who live by eating the skin. So there's a lot of things happening, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, beyond our experiencing jurisdiction. That was his language. So the Bhagavatam, these are true stories, but the Acharyas sometimes they use metaphorical stories to illustrate a particular point. So, but one has to have intelligence. The main thing is one doesn't follow blindly. And as far as going to the moon, you just mentioned that. Prabhupada said, even if they did go to the moon, so it wasn't, Prabhupada was not presenting it as an absolute. You have to understand, sometimes the guru is presenting things because he's a person has an opinion. And sometimes he's presenting as an absolute. Absolute is when it's reciting Shastra. You can make a Shastric reference. Just like I mean, just like in the beginning days, Prabhupada asked Brahmananda, who had an Indian girlfriend, you may have heard this story, he said, show me a picture of her. And Brahmananda showed Prabhupada the picture of his Indian girlfriend, and Prabhupada said, she's not so attractive. But that's not an absolute statement, you know, she's not so attractive. And Brahmananda, at that point, taking Prabhupada's words as his life and soul, considered her ugly at that point. So, it's not an absolute statement. You know, to someone, your beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. So, or Prabhupada may say, you know, here's another statement. Potatoes are the king of vegetables. I personally don't like potatoes. Does that make me a demon? I don't like it. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with his statement, but that's his. You know, Prabhupada had certain likes. I have other likes. I like sweet potatoes. Not white potatoes. I won't touch a white potato. So, you know, we have to understand, and that's also bordering on the branch of philosophy called hermeneutics, which we don't want to get into right now. So, okay, we either got Vaishnavi or Rupa, what? Who? Rupa? Rupa. Vaishnavi.
Yeah. So where is the trial and check? I remember a few years ago in Auckland you said we need someone who we can confide in confidentially.
Yes.
Who will actually guide us and say, no, actually what you're doing is not right. But we can't really openly...
No, not. We don't need everybody to tell us that.
We know we make mistakes. So, not everyone is kind of fortunate to have someone that can trust.
Well, we should look for someone we can trust. I just use a mirror. It works really well. No, I mean, actually, we need people. You know, we all need friends. You know, without friends, what is life about? Someone who we can reveal our mind to. I mean, it's miserable not to have someone like that. I mean, you see, the devotees who actually have trouble in spiritual life, they don't have any friends. You know, they don't have someone they can reveal their mind, bounce things off, who someone could see them from a different perspective. So it is important to have friends. Not just guru, but friends in devotional service. Rupa, you had a question?
Maharaj, you were talking about fulfilling desires, so like in the...
Fulfilling needs.
Brahmachari
needs. I didn't say desires.
Needs.
Desires are endless, you know. I want a Tesla.
Brahmachari ashram is sort of very black and white, you know, between what is Maya and what is not. But once you get a degree of life, there's many more shades of
Everything's gray. Shades of gray.
It seems to be more and more shades.
It's multicolors, you know.
As you go on in the gray, so
yeah, let it all hang out, you know. If it feels good, it's good for you. But, so what's the point?
Well, and you say, well, fulfilling our needs without breaking the regulative principles, I mean, how far we could extend it, like, you know, fulfilling these needs, the many shades.
Well, you have to understand what needs are. I think implicit in the question you're asking is the difference between needs and desires.
Mm.
You know, you have to really understand what is a basic need. And, you know, if you're interested, read my book, which Kishori distributed all of last night. You know,
I have one left.
One left.
Yeah.
Which will sell for the price of $10,000 today. But anyway, so, if you're interested, I can send you anybody a free e-copy if they write me email. Next time I'll bring a whole bunch more with me. Because Dowji wanted to have 50 of them. But it's really important to go through that hierarchy of what basic needs are.
Yeah.
And you confuse needs with desires. Like I said, I have a desire, you'll give me an example, I have a desire for a Tesla, all right? And why? Because I have a need for transportation. So instead, I'm using a Prius. Which it fills a need, but not my desire. You know, I'm still a little frustrated that I don't have one. But anyway, so... But at the same time, I couldn't see wasting Krishna's money. So, you know, I have to be able to distinguish. Desires are endless. You know, you can't. Avritam jnana maitena jnani no nichavayana kamarupena kuntiyat dushparena lenacha. I mean, it's like putting petrol onto a fire. There's no end to it. You want more and more and more. So, but needs are something different. Is that... Anyway, I can...
Maybe a lot of those things we think are our needs, so that we don't actually...
That's right.
Desires are unnecessary. Exactly.
Like, just give an example. A brahmachari may say, I need to get married. But he may just need a friend. He may need a friend, you know. And, you know, some people get married just because the ashram is just too intense for them. But there may be other options. I'm not saying don't get married. I'm just saying people confuse needs with desires.
And strategies, right?
What?
And strategies as well. Like, I found the person, I feel like it. There's a need, but I see it as a desire through my own strategy.
Desires are strategies, and it's important to help people develop the right, or help yourself develop the right strategy to fulfill the need that doesn't conflict with other needs. You understand? So you really have to balance. I mean, it gets a little more complex. That you understand you have a need, physical needs, spiritual needs, mental needs, emotional needs. Don't try to fulfill an emotional need with something that's going to conflict with your spiritual need.
Typical example would be comfort eating. You practice to feel emotional
need. Yeah, comfort eating. Because some people have emotional needs and they use eating as a means to fulfill the emotional needs, and as a result they may eat too much or eat the wrong thing and damage their health. So once they identify that my eating so much is due to having emotional needs, then they can find some other way to fulfill that emotional needs. I mean, maybe get a dog, I don't know. I mean, sometimes you got to think outside the box. You know, it's true. I mean, this, in my book I present in one of the chapters. One of the chapters is entitled All You Need Is Love. Remember that chapter? And I present the fact that people who have loving relationships live on the average. And there's scientific studies, not just coming from me. It's not Shastra, but it's coming from scientific studies. Live on the average of 8 to 10 years longer than people who don't. You know, it's commonly known that people who have dogs live longer than people who don't. I'm not saying get a dog. Whoops, it's a garbage man. But it's a question of loving relationships. And that's a basic need. So anything else before we end? Yeah.
So it's complicated to understand the difference between needs and desires in ourselves. But then if we expand it to serving the devotees and serving each other, interrelational, we also need to work out what their needs and desires are and how we can serve them according. Or is there just a broader way?
We need to, be careful using the word need too much. It's a strategy, you know, working with devotees and helping them advance in devotional service fulfills a need for compassion and loving relationships. So it's really important to distinguish between strategies and needs. The strategy may be good. It is. I mean, I love the strategy of working with devotees, helping devotees and everything like that. And it fulfills my need to contribute. It fulfills my need to be of value. It fulfills my need to have some purpose in life. It fulfills my need to have loving relationships. I mean, all those different needs are fulfilled, and then by this particular strategy. I mean, that's how I see it. Anyway, little complex. Please read the book if you don't understand. Order it on Amazon or whatever. Yes.
I'm not sure if it's the ninth or tenth commandment, but it says don't teach people about like stuff if you don't already have faith.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the ninth offense on chanting, that don't instruct the glories of the Lord to those who are faithless. And the way I put it in the positive is that you adjust your presentation according to a person's ability to hear. So I don't like negative so much. I mean, that's a negative. Isn't it? I'm just doing it. I'm doing what I don't like anyway. If you notice, you know, I'm a hypocrite. So I hate negatives. Anyway, so that's a double negative. So I do like, let's put it in positive. I'd like to present things positively. So my recommendation is before you speaking to someone about Krishna consciousness, try to understand who they are, where they're at, what their needs are. I mean, we can present Krishna consciousness understanding people's needs. You know, people have a need for friendship, or we give them a society in friendship. But to be careful not to over-present, because people can only digest a certain thing. You don't give people too much to eat, or else they get sick. So that's how I would look at that particular offense on Chani. It's called an offense on Chani. Does everyone understand that? Does it make sense?
I remember in Melbourne Temple, as a new bhakta, and I'm preaching to a couple who come to the Melbourne Temple for prasadam, and I'm talking about how the food is offered. Krishna takes that offering, and somehow he enjoys that. And then I somehow got onto talking about, and he's enjoying separately himself also with the gopis. I found myself talking about the spiritual world, thinking, you know, and I'm getting all energized. I'm hearing my words, and then the couple said to me, "We just came here for prasadam, if you don't mind, you know."
Yeah.
"We just came here to eat, if you don't mind, you know."
That's a perfect example. Or you could say to them, this food has Krishna's saliva in it. That's a no-no. Okay, I think we have to end now. It's a long class. All glories, there's my great Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Her Holiness Kishori Das. Group photo. There's too many groupies here. We got people watching from all over.